Welcome to this edition of Environment Matters with me, Amanda Yorworth. Environment Matters is the show that brings you news on issues of sustainability and the environment from around St. Albans and from further afield. Now, I hope that you had a spooktastic Halloween. No doubt you saw a few plastic bats floating around. And if you're anything like me, you probably gave them little thought and certainly no thought to the real thing that they represent. But local bats have been coming up with some real surprises. Recently, local bat surveyors were astonished to find that one of the bats that they had caught was not a local bat at all, but had come all the way from Latvia. Now, I took a look on Google Maps. That's a journey of 1,250 miles, and Google estimates that if I was to go under my own steam, it would take me over 15 days. So how on earth did a tiny bat weighing only a few grams without the benefit of Google Maps manage at all? And why would he manage it? I spoke to Matt Dodds. He's the Planning and Biodiversity Manager at Herts and Middlesex Wildlife Trust to find out more. Matt, thank you very much indeed for joining me. So first of all, why were bat conservation surveying bats at your nature reserve at Stockers Lake?
Well, there's a national project at the moment to find out more about the Nethusius pipistrelle, which is a very poorly understood bat in Britain. It was only recently discovered, relatively recently, it actually occurred in Britain. So the idea behind this survey is to find out a little bit more about them, which is why they were surveying it at Stockers Lake.
Right, okay. And I'm just wondering how they collect, how do you find bats, do you catch them? I presume you do.
Yeah, you do. It's quite a difficult process, quite a skilled process. There's a piece of equipment called a harp trap, which is basically like a wall of string, sort of fine wires, which the bats fly into and then hit the wires. They don't hurt themselves, and then they sort of fall down the wires into a little bag at the bottom. And it's amazing to see them how they try and avoid the strings themselves. It's quite incredible. But at the same time, to lure them in, there's something called an acoustic lure. So the lure will emit calls which the bats find attractive, and then they come and explore it, and then they hit the mist net or the harp trap, and then pull down into the bag.
Wow, that sounds quite ingenious. Mm. And as you say, they're not hurt in this process.
No, they're not, no.
Okay. So when bat conservation, when they were doing the survey at Stockers Lake, did they expect to find the Nethusius pipistrelle?
I think they hoped to find them. It's quite an enigmatic species in that there's very few maternity roosts that we know of in this country, and so why they come here is not really understood to any great degree. So whilst they hoped to find them, they couldn't have expected to find them. But there's a number of other surveys they've been doing up and down the Colne Valley where they found them in other sites as well. So it's really exciting stuff.
Right. Okay. So they've caught these bats in this ingenious trap. How do they know where the bats have come from?
Well, most of the time they don't. But in this particular instance, there was a bat that was ringed. Because they've been doing more catching of bats, and there's quite an advanced ringing program in sort of northeastern Europe, the bats that were attached there, we were lucky enough to find a bat that had one of these rings attached to it, and that was then traced back to Latvia, of all places.
Yeah, I mean, that is amazing. Did you realise that they'd come from such a long distance? Was it a surprise to find that a bat had come such a long way?
Well, there's quite a lot of information about the migration of Nethusius on the continent, but not so much in Britain. So this is really, really exciting. I think in total they've found now seven bats, in total that have been ringed, and mostly in Latvia. It's an incredible achievement for such a small animal to travel that far. I mean, we're familiar with birds travelling big distances, but a bat, when you imagine, it's not only has it got to navigate 1,400, nearly 1,500 kilometres, it's got to do that in the dark,
yes.
Only travelling at night, and it's also got to navigate the British Isle, sorry, the English Channel.
Well, I was going to ask you, do you know how they do this?
Who knows?
No,
I mean,
yes.
Not really. I mean, it's such an incredible.
Yes.
There's lots of sort of information we know about bats in terms of their how they navigate. They use echolocation to navigate.
Yeah.
But it's been said by some studies that they can struggle to cope with removal of, say, something like as small as 10 metres of hedge because they navigate along the hedge and they can become confused by the removal of a hedge. Well this bat travels across the English Channel. So
that's right. Well, I'm thinking there's not so many hedges to follow across the English Channel, is there?
Exactly. I think every question on bats, the first part of every question on bats is it depends on the species.
Right.
And they vary so much in their habits and their ecology. This the Nethusius bat is obviously highly adapted for long distance migration.
That's amazing. So do we know why a bat would come from Latvia?
Again, no, we don't really, which is part of the interest of the whole study. It might be related to mating behaviour. That's probably the most likely reason, because the period of time where they're discovered, which is generally in the spring and the autumn, is thought to be their mating period. And certainly when you find them in bat boxes, they're usually arranged in sort of single males with a breeding group of females with them, sort of like
right.
a bat disco.
That's an intriguing thought as well, isn't it?
Yeah.
I suppose they do hang out at night, don't they? So, yeah, it's a bit like that. I mean, they really are quite quite enigmatic then, aren't they? You know, I suppose the fact that they are nocturnal means that we don't often see them. We don't really know very much about them, why they're flying back as well. And this is what the project is doing, hopefully to find out a little bit more about these intriguing insects, not insects, mammals.
Yeah, exactly. In as well as the trapping of the bats, they've also been doing some taking of samples from their hair, and this is to do something called isotope analysis. And the idea behind that is that you can see where they've been spending their time, because a lot of that is stored in the hair follicles themselves. So you'll be able to, by analysing that, you can see where they've spent the summer months and the rest of the year.
Yeah.
So there's an awful lot of information that you can get off one individual, particularly if they're ringed, because of course the ringing will tell you where they've come from or where they're originally ringed. And
yes.
And some projects, as certainly a bat box project run by a colleague of mine called Patty Briggs, who this bat box project's been running for some years, and they get the same bats being recovered year upon year upon year. So not only are they probably migrating from Latvia or somewhere up in the northeast of Europe, they're also coming back to the same bat boxes in Britain in the same site, which is even more phenomenal.
That really is, isn't it? And can you just tell, just to put this amazing journey that these bats do into perspective, how big is one of these bats?
Well, a heavy weight for one of them is about 10 grams, which is nothing at all.
So that is smaller even than a very small bird, isn't it?
It's probably comparable to something like a blue tit.
Right.
Maybe a little bit bigger, but not much more than that. Yeah,
so,
to imagine a blue tit flying that length of distance is quite incredible.
It is, isn't it? So, I recently heard, there was a report from Germany, wasn't there, that about 75%, we had a 75% drop in the number of flying insects. Now, I assume this is what bats rely on to eat. Are bats affected by this? Have you seen a sort of corresponding decline in bat numbers?
Well, monitoring bats is very difficult, so it's very hard to say absolutely, which is, again, another reason why these projects are really helpful. But it's inevitable that some impacts will happen because of, you know, decline in food. The other projects that the Bat Conservation Trust have been conducting in this country would indicate that actually for many bat species their populations are either stable or slightly rising. So in theory, absolutely there should be an impact, but it depends where they're feeding, of course. So
yeah.
A habitat like the Nethusius pipistrelle likes to feed near water. Now, over the last 50, 60 years, our watercourses have been getting steadily cleaner, and so therefore, theoretically, then the aquatic life that they support should be improving. But you can never be can never be complacent, and no. Certainly there are constant potential impacts, most notable of which is the impact of fertiliser on the land, which then leaches into the watercourses and can damage them that way.
Yes, indeed. And I suppose the other thing is habitat loss might be actually paying a bigger effect, perhaps. And so actually things like your bat boxes that you mentioned that are being put up could be quite important. Can you tell us just some of the things that the Hearts and Middlesex Wildlife Trust are doing to help bats like this little pipistrelle bat?
Well, you mentioned a bat box is very useful, but also habitat creation. So understanding, first of all, doing an inventory of your sites and see which bats are utilising your site. So we've got monitoring equipment that we put up at various sites of ours to see which bat species are using it. And then habitat modification, which will benefit them. So bride creation, glade creation, pond creation, all that sort of stuff makes the habitat that much more complex. And the bat boxes as well, they serve another purpose in as much as they can facilitate monitoring. So by being able then to intercept bats in your bat boxes, you'll get a better idea of what sort of numbers are potentially, and then leads to things like ringing, and then the whole thing develops.
Yeah, a really good example actually of how information is really important to
Absolutely.
Helping a species. Now, do you know whether bats, whether they will live in places like gardens around St. Albans? I mean, it's quite urban. Do you find bats in places like this?
You do, actually. Something that the probably the most common bat species in the UK is the common pipistrelle.
Yeah.
The common pipistrelle is thought that the vast majority of its breeding sites, its maternity sites, are in urban environments. So actually not in trees, but in buildings. They've adapted over many hundreds of years to exploit human habitation for roosting. And of course, it's a very stable environment. And their natural home is they're an edge species. So they like the edges of woodland. And of course, what is a garden other than something that simulates the edge of a woodland? So if you've got, you know, a nice garden which is supportive of lots of insects, then you're highly likely to have common pipistrelles particularly. Other bat species are more specific in their requirements, but a pipistrelle is quite generalist, so you're likely to find it.
So if we wanted to do things to help these really quite amazing little mammals, what a couple of things that we could do in our gardens to help?
First, we'll cut down on your pesticide use. The second thing you could do is to plant species that are more likely to attract insects. Pipistrelles like very small insects. So anything that's likely to attract that. Go native. Use native plants wherever you can. Lots of water as well. So pond creation, that sort of thing. And putting up a bat box, whilst they're more likely to use your house, putting up a bat box can be often quite useful for attracting bats for mating purposes. So earlier on in our discussion, I talked about these Nethusius bats flying all the way to England to go back to the same bat box for mating. Well, that's something that you could do. You could put up a bat box. And the best bat boxes are something called woodcrete bat boxes, which are made of a mixture of concrete and wood chip, which are very long-lasting and nice and stable in temperature.
Excellent. Well, we'll have to look out for those then. Thank you so much for coming and telling us about these really fascinating mammals. Thank you very much indeed, Matt.
No problem.
There you go. I was talking to Matt Dodds of the Hearts and Middlesex Wildlife Trust. Now, you'll have heard that he was on the telephone there. Unfortunately, he couldn't join me in the studio as he has his leg in plaster, having ruptured his Achilles. So our best wishes go to Matt for a speedy recovery. I thought those bats were fascinating, weren't they? You know, something that you don't even see them around very often, but they're obviously there and they're obviously amazing animals. So you'll find all the information from on the environment pages of the Radio Rowland website. I'll put a link so that you can read more about the amazing bats that flew from Latvia, and also some reminders about how you can make your garden a bit more bat-friendly. And talking about gardens being good for wildlife, if you're planning to light a bonfire for Guy Fawkes Night, then please, please make sure you move all the materials that you're going to be burning to the spot where you're going to have your bonfire at the very last moment, so that you don't accidentally cremate any poor hedgehogs or frogs that have hidden underneath your cosy pile of rubbish. And wildlife will really appreciate all the leaves that are falling down now, if you rake them into some nice piles in the corner of your garden rather than burning them or binning them, I mean, it's so much easier, isn't it? Let's face it. And those are just the kind of places that wildlife loves to live during the winter. So that's a really easy thing you can do at the moment. Now, on Thursday, that's tomorrow, you're warmly invited to a special chance to hear a visitor from Palestine who's going to be speaking at Trinity Church in St. Albans, not far from the station. You'll know it's sort of red brick church. Professor Mazim, I can't pronounce his name very well, you have to excuse me, Kumzaye, will be talking about his Palestine Museum of Natural History. He's a very learned chap, very well respected, and his work there. And he's then going to talk on Israel / Palestine, is a one state outcome inevitable? Sounds very interesting, and perhaps a little bit of a perspective from the natural history point of view as well. So that's quite an interesting talk. Says it's an important meeting, and also the organisers hope to establish some links for the future with some local people interested in this sort of thing. So that's at Trinity Church tomorrow night. Quite an interesting talk there. Now, remember, you can find all the information from today's show and indeed from other shows on the environment page of the Radio Verulam website. It's quite a little minor information now. And you can also listen at leisure to the podcast. Now, not just the podcast of this show, but for previous shows. If you missed our shows about the idea of a plastic bottle recycling scheme, they're all still there. So you can hear those. As I say, very, very easy to do. And you can listen just whenever is convenient for you. We all like to hear from you. So tweet us at rv_environment or email at environment@rv.gmail.com. Always like your comments and your ideas for future programmes. If you've got any ideas, then do just get in touch. To be quite honest, listeners, you always come up with the best ideas, so do keep them coming. Anyway, still open for next week, so if you've got any idea for that, then I'd love to hear from you. So until then, 7 o'clock Wednesday, thank you for listening.